At Sephora, we know how you love to use makeup, skincare, hair care, and fragrances that work for you, but also how important it is to be in the know about the ingredients that are in them, which is why we created Clean at Sephora. Curated products from brands like Merit, Amika, Summer Fridays, and Fleur that have everything you want, minus certain ingredients you might not. Clean at Sephora is only at Sephora. Shop now at Sephora.com.
I'm Maria Bartiromo.
I'm Greg Gutfeld.
I'm Tammy Bruce. And this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, March 6, 2023, I'm Mike Emanuel. A new Republican-led Congress promised voters it would deliver oversight of the Biden administration. Hearings are now underway, and subpoenas are being issued, with Congress holding the power of the purse.
Well, the way you react in the legislative bodies, you propose legislation and or you say, look, we're not going to allow money to go for these behaviors that we've now seen. So you use the appropriation process. That's the leverage we have. That's the remedy we have.
I'm Dave Anthony. Do you know what ESG is? Republicans do, and they don't like it. Trying to cancel a Biden financial policy.
This type of intervention from government tells investors, yeah, making money is important, but really focus on all the woke philosophy that sounds good on paper, perhaps, but doesn't do anything but hurt people's bottom line.
And I'm Jimmy Failla. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
A new Republican-led House of Representatives has promised the American people oversight of the Biden administration and its agenda. One hot-button issue with many conservatives is whether government has been weaponized, unfairly treating those on the right. FBI Director Christopher Wray is trying to reassure the public.
You know, I hear these claims of politicization, but I can tell you that the FBI is and is going to stay independent. And that means following the facts wherever they lead, no matter who likes it.
Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, the House GOP conference chair, isn't so sure.
We've seen how the FBI and the Department of Justice have not addressed Hunter Biden's clear crimes, and yet at the same time, they are targeting conservatives and Republicans because of your political beliefs. We see that in their targeting of parents. We see that in their targeting of whistleblowers in their own agencies who raise concerns.
Meanwhile, millions of Americans who had their lives turned upside down want answers about the origin of COVID-19. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton is pushing the Biden administration to speak truthfully and forcefully.
Is this an example of what I mean of Joe Biden and his White House officials bending over backwards to make excuses and apologize for Chinese communists, almost act as their lawyer?
But National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says while the Department of Energy and the FBI are suggesting COVID-19 escaped from a Wuhan, China lab, the White House isn't sold.
There's still no consensus. And that's why the president has directed the team to stay at the work, because he wants to know. He wants to know as best we can know what the origins were so that we can work to better prevent a future pandemic.
As hearings are underway and subpoenas are being issued by a new Congress.
It's been very busy. You know, we've done, I think, more subpoenas than the rest of Congress combined. Not that we're trying to set some record or anything. We're just trying to get the facts for the American people.
Ohio Republican Congressman Jim Jordan is the new chairman of House Judiciary.
I think the two key issues for the committee, the first is what I think is this attack on First Amendment liberties, this idea that the government and many times in collusion with big tech is going after Americans' First Amendment free speech rights. And then sort of the broader narrative of going after people's rights is this unequal treatment, this one standard for the politically connected, a different standard if you're not part of the politically favored class. And that is not supposed to be how our agencies operate. And then, of course, the second big issue for the Judiciary Committee is the issue of immigration. What we have on the southern border is just a complete chaotic mess, and it's been done in an intentional fashion. So we're going to work on that issue. We expect legislation, frankly, late this month coming out of the committee that would immigration enforcement legislation that we think needs to be passed to get us back to where we were just a couple years ago.
You've been taking a deep dive into the FBI, requesting to hear testimony from 16 current or recent employees of the Bureau. After hearing of potential injustice going on within the FBI, what information are you hoping to glean from these people? And if you learn of any wrongdoings taking place within the FBI, how do you plan to react?
Well, the way you react in the legislative bodies, you propose legislation and or you say, look, we're not going to allow money to go for these behaviors that we've now seen. So you use the appropriation process. That's the leverage we have. That's the remedy we have. So our job is real simple: to focus on those areas I just talked about, and to get the facts on the table so the American people knows, and then propose legislation, and then use the power of the purse to change things in the agencies that, again, we feel have been targeting the very people they're supposed to serve. I mean, think about it. First, it was parents. A year and a half ago, we learned the FBI targeted parents. Then a few weeks ago, we learned that they had targeted traditional Catholics. And now we learned that they actually turned this threat tag and focused on pro-life people after the Dobbs decision. This is from a whistleblower. Even though all the violence was taking place after the Dobbs decision against crisis pregnancy centers and churches. So that's the kind of thing. We want to get all the facts on the table and then offer legislation. And frankly, look at the appropriations process, which, is, of course, you know, runs through September 30th is the end of our fiscal year, and making changes in how some of these agencies are funded.
You touched on something a short time ago about people feeling like there may not be equal justice under the law, that the government apparatus may be going more aggressively after conservative folks. How do you fix that?
Again, I think you get the facts on the table, and then you look at things we can do legislatively. One that just jumps in my mind that I think definitely needs examined is, you know, the now famous 51 former intel officials who signed that letter that became part of this deal by the government, the FBI working with big tech to suppress information in the run-up to the 2020 presidential election. Right. My guess is probably all 51 of those individuals might have a security clearance. None of them are in government. They're all former government employees. Well, maybe there's a reason for that, but I'd kind of like to know what the valid reason is. And maybe it's time to say, you know what, once you leave government, you don't keep a security clearance. When members of Congress leave government, they don't keep a security clearance. So that's one of the things we may want to look at in a legislative way. Certainly, as I said, on the way you look at the pro-life community, the way Mark Houck was treated, a pro-life activist outside of Philadelphia, the way he was treated with SWAT people showing up at his house, arresting him in front of his wife and children. They prosecuted him, even though the local police and local law enforcement said they weren't going to prosecute. And it had been over a year since the incident happened. That the federal government prosecutes him, and of course they take him to trial, and the jury says not guilty. Look at that compared to what we've seen in the aftermath of the Dobbs decision, the protests at Supreme Court Justice's homes, and all the violence that I talked about before, targeted against churches and crisis pregnancy centers. So that, I think, is a very telling example of the different standards.
Moving on, let's talk COVID origins, because for years now, many officials like Dr. Anthony Fauci concluded, expressing a good deal of confidence, that the virus was not likely caused by a lab leak. But the U.S. Department of Energy came forward saying they believe the most likely cause of COVID is a lab leak. And the FBI director on Fox News even said that he thought it was most likely a lab leak. So what do you make of this? I mean, the White House seems to be burying their heads in the sand about the origins of COVID.
Well, yeah, because they use COVID as a way to restrict people's First Amendment liberties. Ever since the Biden administration has been in office, they went so far as to mandate that if you don't get the vaccine, you lose your job in the private sector. Thank goodness the Supreme Court said it was unconstitutional. But what the Energy Department said this past week is what Americans have known for a long, long time. Any American with common sense, which is the vast majority of our great country, knew that this thing most likely came from a lab. So give me a break. And what I think is interesting is I think Fauci knew from the start, from the get-go, because he gets an email on January 31st, 2020, 10:32 p.m. from Dr. Christian Anderson. The email says, virus looks engineered, virus not consistent with evolutionary theory. Next day, February 1st, he gets another email from Dr. Gary. The email says, I don't know how this happens in nature, but it would be easy to do in a lab. That same day, he organizes a conference call, Dr. Fauci does, gets these same virologists and others on the call, and 3 days later, they all switch 180 degrees. Gary and Anderson, 3 days later, say, oh, you know what? You're crazy if you think it came from a lab. Even though just 3 days before, they said it came from a lab. 3 days later, say it doesn't come from that. The only intervening event is that conference call where I think Fauci got on there and said, hey, we got to get our story straight because we've been doing gain-of-function research in this lab, and we don't want that getting out. And then, of course, the kicker is 3 months after all that, Dr. Anderson and Dr. Gary get a big several-million-dollar grant from Fauci to continue their research. Now, that is disgusting. And we're going to talk about this in a hearing this week. So, yeah, the country knew all along, but it was Fauci trying to hide what he'd been doing, in my judgment, and misled the country. And he continues to do so, which is maybe the most disgusting part of all.
Do you think President Biden is worried about embarrassing the Chinese at this point? I mean, because Fauci's out of office, you could say, all right, he was mistaken at the time or something like that. But they're still reluctant to say these guys screwed up. It was built in a lab.
Yeah, I think this is just a general problem in the White House when it comes to foreign policy. I think this administration doesn't project strength in any way. That frankly is, I think, why you saw a little over a year ago Putin take the aggressive action and the wrong action that he took going into Russia going into Ukraine. I always point out, Mike Pompeo was asked the question about a year ago, would this have happened in the Trump administration? He gave a great answer. He says, the short answer is, I don't know. But I do know this, it didn't happen in the Trump administration. So that's the fundamental thing, is I think this White House is just afraid to stand up to, frankly, just about anyone in a real and meaningful way, unlike the previous administration was able to do.
I'd also like to get your thoughts on an issue that's likely hitting home for you, the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. It caused potentially harmful chemicals to fill the air in the community. And now, just more than a month later, another train derailed in Clark County, Ohio on Saturday. This time, thank God, there was luckily no signs of any chemical spills, but still another train derailment that has many Americans worried another spill could soon happen in the future. What do you believe needs to be done to lessen the probability of these derailments happening?
Well, there may need to be some legislation. I don't know. I'm not on the Transportation Committee, and I'll defer to the experts there on the House Transportation Committee. What I do know is we haven't seen a whole lot of leadership, and frankly, from this administration, and frankly, just empathy for when people have tragic situations happen in their community, like what happened in East Palestine. The fact that the President of the United States has not went there, I just... Part of the job is when things happen in your district, and of course for the President of the United States, it's the entire country, right. When major things happen, tragic things happen, part of the job is showing up. And God bless President Trump. He did show up and talk to the folks there. And of course, President Biden is yet to do so.
And of course, the Transportation Secretary, Pete Buttigieg, seemed reluctant to go, waited a couple of weeks, and I think only went the day after President Trump was there.
That's exactly right. And, Mike, I really appreciate President Trump, and I think he was best president we've had, and certainly in my lifetime. The fact that he showed up and was at the McDonald's buying Big Macs for folks and just visiting with the American people, the good folks in Eastern Ohio, and yet Buttigieg took forever and President Biden is yet to go, I think, again, just shows the difference in the type of leadership.
Let's talk briefly about big tech, the House Judiciary Committee's investigation into big tech. You recently subpoenaed many big tech CEOs from companies like Amazon and Google to look into potential efforts to suppress free speech. You and many other House Republicans have been looking at possible corruption in big tech for a while now, especially following the release of the Twitter files and other evidence supporting the notion that the Hunter Biden story was censored online. So where are you on this with big tech? How's it going?
Well, they're giving us documents. We've asked for give us the kind of information that we think exists there, because they were all getting the same briefings from the government. Give us the same kind of information that Twitter made available, that Elon Musk made available when he purchased Twitter. We think this happened at Facebook and Google and these other platforms. That's the information we've asked for. What kind of communications we have? We know that Joel Roth from Twitter said that he met with and other people and other Silicon Valley tech companies were meeting on a regular basis throughout 2020 with ODNI, FBI, and the Department of Homeland Security. So you got all the, and there's all these communications that are being sent to Twitter. We think the same thing was going on with Facebook, Google. So we've asked for that information because we want to see how pervasive this attack on First Amendment free speech rights was. Remember, in some of the Twitter files, you have the FBI sending emails to Twitter saying, hey, we think these accounts should be taken down because we think they violate your terms of service. I mean, that's the craziest stuff I've ever seen. And of course, Twitter said, handled. We took this down. Biden administration asked us to do this. Handled. The other was, accounts and tweet, or in the term they use is visibility filtering, shadow banning, limiting the exposure of statements that people are making on and what is now the equivalent of the public square. So that's the information we're looking for. It's beginning to come in. And we're beginning to take a good hard look at it.
The chairman of the powerful House Judiciary Committee, Jim Jordan of Ohio, thank you so much for your time. Have a great week.
Thank you. Take care, Mike.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
This is Jimmy Failla with your Fox News commentary coming up.
President Biden is getting ready to do something he hasn't yet. Veto a bill that would undo something his administration did related to retirement funds.
We believe that retirees should have more money in their pockets, more money in their accounts.
Republican Senator Ted Budd on the resolution that passed last week with the help of two Democrats, Senators Joe Manchin and John Tester, to end a Biden policy that allows retirement fund managers to consider factors like corporate social justice policy and climate change impact when deciding what companies to invest in.
This essentially changes from economic returns to social returns, and that doesn't pay the bills when it comes to retirees.
The GOP-led House also approved the resolution to cancel what they consider woke retirement money managing.
This is unacceptable to the president, and that is why he will veto this bill if it does come to his desk.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, this type of investing is called ESG, which we'll get into a little later. And it's been growing. The trade group USSIF, representing what it calls responsible and sustainable investing, says ESG-based investments topped $8 trillion last year.
It sounds good, but the point of investing, the purpose of investing is to make money for your investors, for the pension plans, for the retirees.
Jonathan Honig is a portfolio manager at the Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund and a Fox News contributor.
I think the real fear is that it's impacting people's bottom lines. And in fact, evidence from a lot of studies suggests that those who follow this sort of ESG investment model actually underperform those who do not.
By how much, though? Are we talking about 10%, 20%, or a fraction of a percent?
Well, you know, it's about a half a percent on an annualized basis. This is a study from 2007, published in Forbes. ESG fund managers underperform. So they do about 5.5%, 5.4% a year. That's compared to non-ESG funds that do over 6%. So we're talking about over half a percent. And keep in mind, Dave, that's year after year after year. Now, these funds are also more expensive than non-ESG funds. And for an investor with that long-term perspective, fees are so important. Even kind of more troubling is that these funds tend to do worse even than the market itself. Last year, for example, was a terrible year for the market, and 8 of the largest 10 ESG mutual funds did worse than the S&P. So I think, you know, these ESG types of approaches simply don't add up. But it kind of makes sense, Dave. I mean, think about it. If you were, you know, drafting players for a team, you're on a soccer team, a baseball team, you pick the best players. And as investors, you know, that's what we're doing. We're looking for the most profitable companies, the most promising companies. So when you start to evaluate a company, for example, based on what the abortion policy is for their health plan, or, you know, whether or not they give to Black Lives Matter, I mean, that might be important to someone, you know, in academia, but from an investment perspective, you're trying to make money and you're supporting companies that are doing exactly that for their investors. So I think that's the real fear here, is that you're sacrificing returns. And then again, you're in effect letting that woke agenda start to govern how your pension plan is invested.
All right, let's go through the different letters here. The E, we know that's environmental. The argument that some make would be that you're looking for companies with better records, companies that may have less risk of fines from regulation and, say, a future government attempts to regulate environmental issues, and companies that care about climate change, the argument is, might be better prepared for future problems that are caused by the changing weather.
Well, it's you know, it sounds good, Dave, but it's really an argument against investing in fossil fuel. And, you know, this whole notion, I would challenge the whole notion of the E and ESG, that somehow companies that deal in with the environment or use the environment or, you know, burn gas or explore for fossil fuels are not worthy of investment. And in fact, these have been, they've some of the best long-term investments, especially for folks now who are looking to live off dividends or have income in their portfolio. Historically, big oil companies have been a great place to invest.
Actually, if you didn't invest in those companies last year when the market was going down, you had an even worse year, right? I mean, that was the only sector in the S&P that did well.
That's exactly the point. In fact, during the 1970s, the same thing. I mean, during an environment which really wrecked by inflation, a lot of those energy companies, you know, much hated, much demonized energy companies, actually provided investors with really what they're looking for, which is positive results and positive profits in their portfolios.
The S would be social. You talked about abortion or Black Lives Matter. Also, they look on, say, whether a company is being fair in their working conditions, in pay for their employees, and the argument being if you focus on those companies that do better with employees will have lower turnover and ultimately better profit. What do you say to that?
Well, companies that are unfair to their employees, day-to-day, they tend not to succeed. They really tend not to stick around for too long. I mean, it's always fair, however, in whose eyes, you know. Historically, for example, you have a lot of advocates arguing for higher minimum wages, but then when you put that type of policy into practice, inevitably what that leads into less jobs. There's been study and study after demonstrated that. So, you know, this idea that you're going to affect social change through investing in companies that have certain types of healthcare programs or, you know, allow their employees, you know, certain holidays off and other days off. I mean, frankly, if the employees didn't like it, if they felt like this was such a big issue, they wouldn't be working there. So again, I would just challenge this as a basic notion of how to invest.
The G is governance, corporate governance. And this would argument for people who advocate this type of investing, say they're going to look at the companies that don't necessarily tie pay to performance as much, that maybe it forces companies to have more independent boards of directors, not this boardroom mentality. What's your response to that?
Well, I mean, as investors, we're always evaluating management, right? I mean, they're the ones that we delegate to actually manage the money, run our investors, run these companies. So, you know, we've always been evaluating exactly as you alluded to, in places where there might seem like there's shady dealings between the manager and family members, that's always raised red flags among investors. You know, what's more the case now is, you know, you see time and time again, the ESG managers, for example, simply objecting to CEO pay, believing that the CEO makes too much. Why? Well, because of whatever social criteria they think. He makes more than the person stacking the shelves or more than the person driving the trucks. Again, if you're interested in making money, however, a good CEO can be really worth it. I mean, imagine a Tesla without Elon Musk, who calls ESG a sham, by the way. Or imagine Apple without Steve Jobs. These companies wouldn't exist by we know them. So I think that's the fear with the ESG is these folks' criteria of what is good governance doesn't always equate to better profits. And oftentimes, an expensive CEO is absolutely worth it. They miss out on those types of opportunities when they follow this philosophy in their portfolio.
Now, Democrats who want the Biden administration Labor Department rule to stay in place argue, look, there's nothing in that that forces any retirement manager to use these ESG incentives and viewpoints. Nothing, it doesn't force them to do anything. It just allows it to happen.
You know, if government is sending a signal that this is the type of investments that they're preferring, you're going to see that reaction in the private market. So you're even now seeing in the recent years, as this has become more and more of a drumbeat for Democrats and even some on the other side. I mean, you're seeing more and more fund companies and Wall Streeters bring out products that, you know, specialize in ESG, and it's become its own cottage industry. And again, I just question the benefit. As we pointed out, these ESG funds underperform by 0.5% a year. They're more expensive. And probably the most insulting, even to those who'd like to affect social change, there's numerous studies that says companies who are in ESG portfolios actually have worse compliance records for things like labor and environmental rules.
What if I say, look, in my 401k, I want to be socially conscious. I want to invest in companies that have these ESG values, and I want my retirement portfolio invested in those things. And I call my money manager, that's what I want. Could I do that?
Absolutely. You know, isn't that the beauty of America, right, David? Is that, you know, you make the money and you decide how and where it's invested. That's gone on for a long time, but that was always a choice made by, as you said, individuals with their own moralities and their own money. Now you've got government getting into the business, not just government pension plans and all the billions and hundreds of billions they allocate, but government regulation writ large. So, you know, we don't have, unfortunately, the free market that we should have in money management and savings in this country. Government plays a real heavy hand, not just in the money they allocate, but in the regulation of those fiduciary advisors. So, you know, you can imagine a scenario, for example, where a money manager puts a client's money into a green energy cylindra or something that goes belly up. That investor sues the advisor, but the advisor says, look, I was just following the government's recommendation to focus on environmentally friendly programs. And the investor says, well, wait, this company was hanging on by a thread. He said, well, you know, profit is important, but saving the environment is important as well. So, you know, in the financial world, it's always been about making money. And I think this is the real slippery slope, is that this type of intervention from government tells investors, yeah, making money is important, but really focus on all the woke philosophy that sounds good on paper, perhaps, but doesn't do anything but hurt people's bottom line.
But the president's going to veto this. So the rule's going to stay in place. So now the attempt to stop it fails. Now what?
Well, I mean, this really, I think it's not going to be something, Dave, that kind of overnight you see a collapse, you wake up the next day and the computers don't work. And, you know, it really becomes a slow philosophical creep. And it really should be the fears. And more politics comes into people's portfolios, not just looking for profitable companies, but making, in my opinion, really irrational judgments about the type of companies. You know, if you're talking about 0.5% over a 20-year investment time period, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars on the average portfolio over time. So, you know, you're simply leaving money on the table for what benefit? Of, you know, virtue signal to your friends that you're not invested in cigarettes and tobacco, or in the oil companies. I think if you don't want to smoke, don't smoke, but it shouldn't preclude you from investing in legitimately good American businesses that provide values every single day.
Jonathan Honig, portfolio manager at Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund and a Fox News contributor. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
Here's a look at the week ahead.
Monday, Finland's president begins a tour of the U.S. starting in Seattle. Later in the week, he'll visit California and the nation's capital to discuss Finland's desire to join NATO. Tuesday, voters in Oklahoma take part in a special election to decide whether the state becomes the latest to legalize recreational marijuana for those 21 and older. Wednesday, an attempt will be made to launch the largest 3D-printed object into space. Terran 1 is a 110-foot-tall two-stage rocket that's 85% 3D-printed. The engines, which use liquid oxygen and liquid natural gas, are entirely 3D-printed. Thursday, President Biden unveils his budget proposal to Congress. The White House says the budget will include some higher taxes for the nation's wealthiest, but won't affect those making less than $400,000 a year. The president has said he plans to cut the nation's deficit by over $2 trillion over the next 10 years. And that's a look at your week ahead. I'm Rich Dennison, Fox News.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Jimmy Fallon.
What's on your mind?
So the 95th Academy Awards are coming up this week. And if you're like most people, you could care less. It's a phenomenon I explore in my new documentary, The Death of Hollywood, which is now streaming on Fox Nation. Now, you might think we'd call an Oscars documentary The Death of Good Behavior after Will Smith stormed the stage and hit Chris Rock. After all, that was a super noteworthy moment because, one, we'd never seen anything like it before, and two, it's the first time in history liberals wanted to discuss black-on-black crime. But in the end, we're calling it the death of Hollywood because in the last 10 years, the stars have walked the red carpet while the ratings have walked the plank. The Oscars have lost over 25 million viewers since 2012, which works out to one for every Fast and the Furious sequel they've released. Now, to be clear, I'm not happy Hollywood's tanking because I've always loved the escape movies provided us from everyday life. But since Hollywood started shoving political messages down our throat at every turn, the Oscars have turned into the world's best-dressed group therapy session. And the only way to get an escape anymore is to shut them off. Here's the deal. Nobody wants to get a condescending lecture from some empty suit who has all his words written for him. And if we did, people would actually watch The Seth Meyers Show. Like, Earth to Hollywood. You guys are famous because you've hit the genetic lottery. You are all so good-looking, we're willing to pay $22 for a popcorn to hear you recite the words that were written by an ugly person. Take it from a guy who's worked in a few writers' rooms. There aren't a lot of show ponies galloping around back there. But think about it. Matthew McConaughey is so hot, they put him in a Cadillac commercial and he doesn't even have a script. He just drives around the countryside mumbling to himself like a stone carny and everybody takes the ride. Tom Cruise is so gorgeous, they're making Mission Impossible 7 this year, with no regard for the fact that it's totally false advertising, because, dude, if you pulled the mission off the first six times, it can't be that impossible. Like, how about Mission Fairly Difficult but Doable? Or Mission Highly Doubtful, but hey, you never know. As it turns out, the only thing impossible is taking the Oscars seriously anymore because acting like political pundits was the one show nobody asked for. And that's where I feel bad for actors and actresses who are too stupid to know they're ruining a good thing. The Oscars used to be a celebration of the luckiest people on Earth, people whose lives were so spectacularly better than ours that we didn't even pretend to be in their league. If anything, we were just happy for a chance to ride along one night a year while they wore fancy dresses, did their cocaine, and hooked up at the after party. At least that's how I always pictured it as a little kid. But the point is, nobody asked Hollywood to go political and pretend they cared about us. We didn't need a lecture on inclusion from a gal who's wearing a dress that 99% of the world could never afford. Nor do we want to be told about inequality from a guy who makes $30 million a year to pretend he's a cop while real cops don't make enough money. No, the only thing we ever wanted from Hollywood is a good show. Unfortunately, the only thing they're showing us is that they're too dumb to get it. Be sure to check out The Death of Hollywood, which is now streaming on Fox Nation, and listen to Fox Across America with me, Jimmy Failla, on the Fox News app and foxacrossamerica.com.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
I'm Emily Campagno, and this is the Fox True Crime Podcast, bringing you closer to the story than you ever thought possible. Subscribe at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. These are the stories that keep you up at night.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.